members to what they call a HESED retreat. If anybody knows what HESED is, it is an organization that works with individuals with developmental disabilities and delays. And so they have a retreat once a year, and people get together. Chris has been helping out with that, so he is considered the chaplain for their weekend. So he approached me and said, well, this is your time to stand up and do the whole worship thing here. God did it again. And I was like, great, wonderful. And then he said, well, just to let you know, we are in our midst of our stewardship campaign. So, and I said, that's no problem. He told me, well, before stewardship, and I was like, okay. But he said, we're going to be talking about many different things during stewardship. And he said, you know, time and energy and yourself and money, of course. And I said, as long as it's not money, I'm fine. And by golly, I get money. Either way, I was hoping we could switch last week. He could have done this and did it next week, and I could have done what he did last week, but that's okay. I think I'm where I'm supposed to be at the time I'm supposed to be at. So we will be discussing money today. So and how, you know, the monies that are donated to Covenant Christian Church are a wonderful blessing upon us, and not only us as a community, but also our community at large. And there's a lot of ways I could take it. I could tread lightly, or I could go headlong, and I'm trying to figure out what I can do. And I think I'm going to go headlong, so don't get upset with me. So. But I'm going to do my best, all right? But I'm going to get into it first, because the scripture verse that we're reading today is Paul, his trip to Corinth. If you know anything about the lay of the land with regards to the New Testament, you understand the Gospels tell us Jesus' story, death and resurrection, of course, and that leads us into the other books that tell us a lot of people going out telling others about Jesus. And Paul was one of those major players. His handwriting is all over the New Testament, if you will. Interesting relationship, didn't even know Jesus, but yet he becomes the apostle that really sheds light on who Jesus was and the one that we follow suit with. And so what he would do is he would go out, just like many others, would build relationships with churches, okay? Build relationships with people in churches all over Europe and Asia and in certain parts of the world. And at his time, this was only a few decades after Jesus' death. So we're going to talk about Paul and his relationship to the church of Corinth, okay? And before we get into that, before we dig into this, okay, I want to give you an idea of who Corinth is. It's really modern-day Greece, as you understand Greece, so it's in the midst of the Mediterranean Sea. So in his living with the people, we come to find out who Corinth is, who the Corinthians are that live in Corinth. And reading about them and really trying to understand them, I got a sense that they were very similar to who we are today. Not in a matter of technology and science and things that we know, but their lifestyle, the way that they lived. They were actually a very well-to-do community, very intellectual, if you will, kind of people who were very, understood themselves to be very important, okay? And so they saw themselves, this and Paul came in to try to teach them understanding of the best way to live, all right? And according to the story and the way we're going to look into it, he says, hey, look, a year ago you guys said you were going to help this church in Jerusalem, okay? This particular church. And now you're trying to back out of helping them, service and whatnot. So, but he's trying to encourage them to say, wait a second, this is what you said you're going to do, and we're going to encourage you to do that. So let's talk about this in a minute, okay? So this is 2 Corinthians chapter 8, verses 7 through 15, all right? Now, as you excel in everything, in faith, in speech, in knowledge, in utmost eagerness, and in our own love for you, so we want you to excel also in generous undertakings. I do not say this as a command, but I am testing the genuineness of your love against the earnestness of others. Remember, he's talking to the church of Corinth here. For you know the generous acts of our Lord Jesus Christ, that though he was rich, yet for your sake he became poor, so that by his poverty you might become rich. And in this matter, I'm giving you advice. It is appropriate for you, who began last year, not only to be something, but even to desire to do something. Now finish doing it, so that your eagerness may be matched by completing it according to your means. For it is the eagerness there, the gift of acceptable according to what one has, not according to what one does not have. I do not mean that there should be relief for others and pressure on you, but it is a question of a fair balance between your present abundance and their need, so that their abundance may be for your need, in order that there may be a fair
this isn't salvation. There's still a responsibility that you have. All right? So it's really important that we kind of move forward, okay? And we understand this relationship that Paul had with the church at Corinth. And I really started to dig deep, trying to figure out, where am I going to go with this? How am I going to infuse this into our understanding of who we are? And I said, you know, we could talk about how we need to give to the church and make sure that it sustains itself and all that good stuff so that we can still be here, so that we can do the good work that we do here at Covenant, that we can enlighten people, hopefully, as we have been doing in the past and we will continue to do. But I felt that an easy way out, all right? I wanted to really jump into it and help us to understand that it's an internal struggle that we each must exist and live by. Not just one here at Covenant Christian Church. Not just one when y'all step in the confines of this place. Each one of us needs to move forward. Each one of us needs to have a better understanding of what it means to be generous and to live from our abundance. Okay? We live in a culture that believes that we don't have enough resources, that the resources are not there for us. And so when I approached this, I was trying to say, okay, Paul was talking to them, trying to alter their mindset, helping them to understand what they need to do. And so we need to do that as well. And so therefore, I'm going to move into it. In my research, if you will, am I trying to understand what is the best way for us to live? Yes, I look to Scripture, but also try to find other people out there who are creating things that really are transformative, things that can alter our lives. And what I came to understand is that Paul's message to the church at Corinth is similar to the message that we as Covenant Christian Church need to take out into the world, okay? He was the transformer at that time, and we are the transformers at this time, all right? We need to go beyond our walls. And I think there are four shifts that need to take place. We need to understand how we live our lives now and how we should transform them and shift them into a different way of understanding. All right, so there are four of them that I want to bring forth. And a lot of this came about in my research, and I found this gentleman, very insightful, very inspirational, if you will. His name is Nipun Mehta, and he is a young man who works in and around Berkeley, and he came up with this particular idea, and it's called service space. So if you look that up, you'll be able to find a lot of things regarding Nipun Mehta. But it was these four understandings that he brought forth that I thought were quite insightful and could be very meaningful to who we are. He says that we as a society, as individuals, as people, need to move from an idea of consumption and move into a stronger idea of contribution. Not how we can consume, but how we can contribute. Okay? He says that 3,500 ads a day reach our eyes. Okay? Most of them, subconsciously, we don't recognize them, but people are trying to tell us on a daily basis, hey, look, you are incomplete as a person. Okay? You as a person are incomplete until you buy my product, okay? Or until you buy my service or purchase my service. So daily, we are bombarded with images of our incompleteness. And so what we need to do, and so what we do is we try to hoard. We try to keep as much as we can because we feel ourselves to be incomplete, all right? But what we need to do is flip it around. Instead of saying, I need to keep this stuff to myself so that I can maintain my existence, instead, be a contributor instead. Instead of thinking about how I can take things and use them for my good, how can I give things for other people's good, okay? And one of the things, the easiest way you can do this is think about this. I've heard the story many times. You drive up these big cities, they have toll roads, not like the big one we have here in Raleigh, but you actually physically have to give money to the person, okay? And sometimes it would be nice, you'd hear these stories of somebody saying, hey, look, your pay's been told by the person in front of you, so you don't have to pay, so you just drive on through. And that's an act of kindness. That's contributing. That simple act is something that is interesting for us to be able to think about. And so most of us would just take it and say, think of it as a gift and then just move on. But think of it in other terms. How can we contribute to this situation? Maybe you want to pay for the person's toll behind you. You have a responsibility. Something was given to you. Don't just take it and consume it. Now think of ways in which you can contribute and give back. Okay, so moving from consumption to contribution would be very important for how we need to alter our mindsets. Another thing that we need to do is, number two, is move from this idea of transaction to trust. Okay, And what this means is, how can we trust people? Okay, we have to learn to trust the other person, not just think of everything as a transaction. You go into a restaurant, you say, I'm gonna buy this particular meal, and I'm gonna pay for my service. Okay, can we not trust others to, in some way, shape, or form, pay for that meal? Take this, Karma Kitchen. Has anybody heard of Karma Kitchen before? It is a restaurant where you go in, you are served, you order whatever you want, and then you get your bill. And on that bill is always a big fat zero. And you walk in, and they're like, what is this? People who have not been there before may not understand it. But what they say is, the person in front of you paid for your meal. Okay, and then you ask them, oh, okay. And they wondered how long this could go on. It's been going on for over 4 years. Has spread from beyond Berkeley, California, gone into New York, Chicago, and around the world, and they've served over 26,000 meals, where people have been paying it forward. They've been buying other people's meals as opposed to their own meal. You've got to trust people. You've got to understand that we are a community of people that can trust each other. So not thinking of it just being a transaction that you have with somebody else, but allowing other people to be a part of that transaction. One of the examples that I found and came across was that one of the economists at Berkeley said, there's something wrong with this Karma Kitchen. Let's try to figure out what's going on here. And they were trying to figure out what's the psychology behind it. And they said, well, let's go to this comic book museum in Berkeley. It's $1 admission to get in. And they said, well, for one day, okay, one day, we're going to allow you, just put a box down there and just say, you don't have to pay. Don't worry about it. But if you want to contribute, you can put, you know, your money in there. They found with just putting that box there, people were contributing $1.23 on average. Okay, so there were people who were contributing a little bit more than what they would have if it just paid for admission. Then they said, well, let's look at this in a different light. They said, okay, so instead of putting a box there and you actually physically have to give the money to somebody, they found out the transaction actually increased the income. Okay, instead of being $1.23, it wound up being around $2 that people were giving to that person. And then they took the Karma Kitchen idea and they said, okay, now, the person walks in, wants to see the comic book museum. They say, okay, instead of, you're still giving it to the person says, look, yours has been paid for, it's free, you don't have to pay for anything else. And they found out the contributions that people were giving when they have been offered something free, such as that, somebody's paid for theirs, and they can contribute to somebody else over $3 that people were giving just for this comic book thing. You've got to understand that this model can work, this model of generosity. We've got to trust that it can work. We've got to change our mindset of consumption to being able to contribute, okay? And so, and there was another, I remember this from a number of years ago. I read this in an article. A 10-year-old was having a birthday party. And he decided, you know, the first part of the party, all of his friends were there. They were doing everything that they, you know, normally do at a 10-year-old party, playing Super Soakers, having a good time, yada, yada, yada. The second part of the afternoon, they felt like they wanted to do something different. They wanted to, in some ways, make it a different event, all right? And so what they did is they made up a whole bunch of signs, and they said, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have a free car wash. We're going to pass this along, okay? And so we're going to not just keep it to ourselves. We're going to pass it along. And so they had a free car wash. Put a whole signs. People start pulling in. They say, oh, what can I donate to? You know, what are you guys fundraising for or whatnot? And they say, no, we're just trying to come together as a community, which leads us to our third thing that we have to do. We're wanting to come together as a community, but a stronger community, from isolation to community. Okay. So what these kids did is, instead of trying to reap a reward, trying to do anything other than, okay, try to benefit from this car wash, they were simply building a community. But not a singular community like when you walk in these doors, you sit beside somebody that you really don't understand or know. Maybe you get to know them on a surface level. They got to know each other in the act of service as a part of a community. Okay, and we can do this. We can do this. If we take time within ourselves and we understand that we need to move beyond consumption to contribution, we move beyond the ideas of transaction to trust, and then we move from isolation to community, okay? Community is not just sitting there in those seats. Community is building, being intentional about what we build. We had a group that went on a mission trip this past summer. First time Covenant's done that in quite a while. And on that mission trip, yeah, we had to pay money, good bit of money. We did a lot of really good work. We created a lot of nice, we did some nice projects for the people in the Caldwell community. But one of the things that we really got out of that was a sense of community. We came together in the act of service. We got to know one another during those acts of service, and we really got to build that community. So we went beyond isolation and went to community. If we can do that, that's very, very important. The last thing that I think we as individuals need to do, and I think this is where Paul was going in his message to the church at Corinth, because he was helping them to understand abundance, okay? Helping them to understand what is abundance and how does it work. But we need to move from the idea of scarcity to the idea of abundance, that we have so much. We have everything at our disposal that we need, that we don't need to go beyond it, okay? And we need to contribute and give back, all right? I was talking to Chris before he left, and he was trying to give me some examples. He gave me some really, really good examples of this. He said there was somebody he was gathered around the table with, and he said one of the ways that I was able to practice this generosity or being able to contribute or give back was we sat around the table. There were eight of us around the table. It was a luncheon that we didn't really know each other, but they said, this is what I did. I said, Are there little cards in your wallet? Items that have been given to you, like gift cards or anything like that, and maybe have some money left on them, okay? If you have those, why don't you give those to me, and I can find a way to turn that into real money that could be used, that you're never going to use, that you probably won't use, maybe been sitting there for a couple of years. And I can take that money and give it to other people and make sure that it can be used, okay? He even came up with there's $37 million out there in gift cards of people who have not given them out or given them to people, okay? And they don't use them, so they're just gathering dust. But that money can be used in so many different ways, okay? But this idea of moving from scarcity to abundance. And the question, it's how do you tap in to what is enough? How do you fully understand what is enough? Do you really think there is enough for everybody? And here's a quote I found from Gandhi. Gandhi said, there's enough, there's more than enough to meet everyone's need. But there will never be enough to meet everyone's greed. Very important that we understand that. Because when we are consuming, and that's all we want to do is hoard and keep what we have, that's greed, all right? That's keeping what we have and not giving it out, not contributing that, okay? So Gandhi had it right. And I think there's a really important message here as well, because the point is that we move beyond just thinking that we don't have enough, we'll never have enough. That next item is going to satisfy my needs in some way, shape, or form, okay? That next thing I do is going to help satisfy me. If we're never going to be satisfied with all these things until we understand what is enough, all right? And one of the examples that I like to give, there were two men, and they were in the headlines, the stories. The Occupy movement was going on back a few years ago, and they were actually in Oakland. They were arrested for meditating in public, okay, because they were part of this movement. So they were people who were trying to change the world in a very peaceful manner, but yet they were arrested. These two individuals also have a backstory with them. They live in a relatively difficult community, if you will, that's smothered by gangs. We know around Oakland there's a lot of gangs, right? A lot of stuff that happens around there. And they live actually in the middle of what, you know, if you want to picture it, they live smack in the middle of two different gangs. And they live on this place that's called Fruit Vine Lane is what it's called. And Fruit Vine Lane is something where there's two different gangs that really dislike each other, and they're kind of in the middle of it. But Fruit Vine is actually what it is. There are a lot of fruit trees in and around Fruit Vine Lane, and they're still there. Of course, they provide fruit, but do most people partake of those fruits? Most of the time, not. I know of people who have apple trees in their yard, and most of the time, the apples just fall, and pretty much they're done with, right? And they're no good, and they rot. Well, these two guys, the backstory, the two that were arrested, pretty much would go and build relationships with these people, okay? That they had the fruit in their yard and whatnot. They said, hey, look, you know, you're not using this fruit. Is there any way I could pick it and kind of give it away? And they said, oh, yeah, sure, no problem. You know, that's great because we don't really use it, yada, yada, yada. So they built a relationship with those people. And they were gang members. They all knew, everybody knew that they were gang members. And they said, well, what we're going to do is we're going to take this and we're going to give it to the people on the other side of the street. And so that's what they did. And so they would go over to the other side, the other gang members, and say, hey, this is a gift from the people on the other side. They weren't using it, and they thought they'd give it to you. It's organic, you know, it's ultra local, it's right here, and it's for you, all right? That was their way of saying, look, it doesn't have to look and feel like money. It doesn't have to look and feel like a lot of stuff, but man, that was an awesome example that they were able to provide. I think the big thing is that we get in our mindset, and I know I did, because I started hearing these things, and these people, their lives are transformed. They're thinking beyond themselves and beyond their means and everything that exists there. And I think of, okay, well, Gandhi can do that, right? And these guys, somehow they had this inept ability to be able to transform their lives. But man, that's a hard thing to do, to transform your soul and your vision into thinking about life in a new way, okay? And the first one being, again, I'm going to go back over them, from movement from consumption to contribution to transaction, from trust to transaction, transaction to trust, sorry. a movement from isolation to the community, to building of a community, and then scarcity to abundance. And we say Mother Teresa can do this, Martin Luther King Jr. could do this, Gandhi could do this. Oh, yeah, this guy named Juan Diaz. Average Joe, New York, New Jersey, lives in New Jersey, goes to work, rides the subway every day, New Jersey, comes back. One day after getting off the subway, coming back from work, he was held up at knife point by a kid. Kid said, give me your wallet. Guy reached in his pocket, gave him his wallet. And then the kid was getting ready to run away. He said, wait a second. Looks like it's cold out here. Do you want my coat too? The kid was like, I didn't know that was going to happen, right? So he's like, okay, I'll take your coat too. And then but the relationship shifted, right? It's a different discussion that's going on then, right? So Juan Diaz is sitting there with this kid, and the relationship changed, and then Juan Diaz says, hey, I'm getting ready to have dinner. Do you want to go have dinner? And the kid says, again, blown away, unsure of what was going to happen, and said, okay, yeah, let's go have dinner. They go have dinner. They build this relationship, all right? And at the end of dinner, Juan Diaz looks over at him. He says, now I want to buy your dinner, but you got my wallet. And the kid reached into his pocket nonchalantly, gave him his wallet back because he built this relationship with this guy. And so he paid for his meal and whatnot. He said, I got one more thing for you, Juan says to him. He says, can I have your knife too? And the kid clearly took out of his pocket and gave him his knife as well. It doesn't have to be Mother Teresa. It doesn't have to be Gandhi, okay? It can be Juan Diaz. It can be you. It can be us. Paul's message to the church at Corinth was to transform their mindset, to get away from this mindset of, hey, salvation has already come to me. Everything in life is good. The resurrected Christ has given me everything I need. That was them looking at themselves in a consumer-driven society where they want to consume as much as they possibly can. Our idea, we live in that society today. We're here in that same society today. And we as Covenant Christian Church, if we can transform ourselves, our lives, each of us, we can be Paul to a lot of other people. We can effect change that so many people need, a change of generosity, a change of being able to go out and share with everyone else and give of your time and your energy. We can all make that change. We can all encourage a life of living in abundance rather than scarcity. It takes a concerted effort, though. It takes time. It takes time for us to go beyond the understanding that what we need is not what it's all about. What we need and what we think we need in our day and age actually turns into greed because we want more. We want more, and we're never fulfilled. So we've got to go beyond that message. I just want to end by saying this. We bring this forward during our stewardship campaign. We remind ourselves that this loving place, this church, this home away from home, Covenant Christian Church, we ask for money. We could easily say, hey, give us your money. This is what we want. This is what it's all about. But it's not about that. I'm sorry. I can't do that. It's more about you being able to transform yourself and your life and your understanding of how we give of ourselves, of our time and our energy, not only in this place, but in lots of different places. It's what we do. It's who we are as Covenant Christian Church. We ask you to prayerfully consider giving of yourself, your time, your money, your energy. However, that will not change unless you are transformed on the inside. If we can live by the means of generosity, if we can be generous to others, if we become a hub of giftism, Covenant Christian Church, giftism is what they like to call it, gifting to others. We can be a hub of gifting to this community. We can be a hub. Think of the change that that would bring, not only to yourself, but to your family, to our church and our community, and to the community at large. That's what we're called to do. That's how we're supposed to transform ourselves, not simplistically by coming to this church and trying to survive and kind of maintain. That's great, wonderful, but if you can change your understanding, your mindset for yourself, you will change not only this congregation, but you will change the world. Peace be with you.